Will the Russians meddle in Latin American elections? That's the subject of today's 35 West podcast. My name is Richard Miles, Deputy Director of the Americas Program here at CSIS. Today we have as our guest David Salvo, a resident fellow at the German Marshall Fund's Alliance for Securing Democracy. David's also a former State Department official and an expert on Russian efforts to undermine Western democracies. David, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, David, as we do with every show, I always sort of start with asking the guest a little bit about themselves. So if you could just tell us, where were you born? Where did you grow up? How'd you end up in this line of business?
Sure. I'm a native New Yorker. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York until I was a teenager, then moved to the Philadelphia suburbs, but kept my allegiance to New York sports teams. So did not cheer the Eagles Super Bowl victory.
No fair weather fan.
No fair weather fan here. I came down to Washington for the first time for college. I went to Georgetown, stuck around for grad school, joined the civil service at the State Department, ultimately went into the Foreign Service, was stationed in Russia. I studied in Russia a couple times as well. It was one of my majors in college. So I've sort of been operating in the Russian space since I was 18 years old, and for some reason caught the Russia bug and never let go of it. And I am.
We forgot to pat you down for wires.
Exactly. No wires on me, okay. But yeah. All right. So, still playing for the right team. Yeah.
So I'm sure you don't click on every link that gets sent to you, right?
I would hope by now I've been fished enough times not to fall for it. Yeah.
So we just concluded, for those of our listeners who don't know, we concluded an interesting program basically on the same topic, and David was one of our experts. And we looked at several questions about Russian interference in elections, and I'm just going to go over them real quickly, David, for the listeners. Basically, what are the demonstrated Russian capabilities to interfere in elections? And then what is the impact of that interference? Does it make a difference at all? And then is there a Russian strategy or end game involved in all this? So let's start with sort of the first one, David. What do we know from elections? Well, we certainly know from the U.S. elections, but outside of the U.S., are there other good examples of the Russians actively interfering in elections?
There are. Two points. Yes, there are other examples. For example, there was the hack of then-candidate Emmanuel Macron's campaign in France, where Russian-attributed hackers leaked a bunch of campaign emails. Of course, that did not have much of an effect on the ultimate result of the election, but it was an attempt by the Russians to undermine the sanctity of those elections. The other point I would say is that it's important to realize that hacks on an election or attempts to undermine an election, they're just one particular tactic in a broader toolkit that the Russians use to destabilize democratic institutions and processes. So elections are a ripe target because they're a very visible demonstration of democracy. And that is why we tend to focus a lot of our attention on those particular events. But Russian influence operations are occurring every day across numerous countries here in the United States, across Europe, and more recently, as we witnessed, even in Latin America.
Let's talk about Latin America. We have elections coming up. The biggest ones are in Colombia, Mexico, and Brazil. Colombia's are, I believe, at the end of May. Their primaries in Mexico, July 1st, and Brazil towards the end of the year. So far, what I have heard an awful lot of sort of suppositions, speculations, rumors, and so on, not a whole lot of hard data on actual interference, but yet the capabilities are certainly compelling enough to believe this is probably, from the Russians' perspective, low-hanging fruit in terms of technically being able to do this if they so desire.
That's exactly right. There is mostly anecdotal evidence that the Russians are already sort of waging a campaign to undermine elections, especially in a country like Mexico. But I would also say that there are instruments of Russian power that perhaps are promoting certain narratives. So, for example, RT and Espanol, the state news agency, one of the state news agencies of the Kremlin, there have been narratives that reporters of theirs have pushed to promote either anti-American sentiments or push the candidacy of Mr. López Obrador. So, again, these are sort of anecdotal pieces of evidence. It's hard to put them into a pattern, but capabilities like that exist, as do the cyber capabilities. And we've even seen a report that the National Institute of Elections in Mexico has put out suggesting that 65% of internet traffic to their internet portal for voter registration is from Russia. And it's curious that 65% of the traffic to a Mexican electoral portal would come from Russia. So again, this is speculative as of now, but you can make certain inferences.
Let's talk now about impact. So let's grant mm-hmm. that the Russians can create thousands of Twitter accounts and thousands sure. of Facebook accounts and so on. And if you read through the indictment that Special Prosecutor Mueller released last month, fairly extensive efforts, spending a lot of money, but also there's a little bit of a ham-handed feel to this where, you know, you've got all these Russian-speaking natives in Moscow or St. Petersburg or wherever they are trying to influence, you know, a race in Texas or in Iowa, and of course, you know, not quite getting the feel for it. Do we have any idea or any indication that they have been able to make a decisive difference in a particular race where they sway it in a way that wouldn't have been swayed had they not decided to set up the fake Facebook group or Facebook rally or whatever?
Sure. It is hard to measure impact. In the case of the United States election, look, that election came down to, what, about 80,000 votes in a handful of states. And I would never state definitively that Russian Facebook ads changed the minds of those 80,000 people who ultimately voted for Donald Trump. However, the Russians bought Facebook ads that ultimately reached over 100 million Americans in a race that came down to 80,000 people. Did that ultimately swing the election? We'll never know. Maybe not. Probably not. But the fact that there's a conversation about the fact that the Russians actually spent these resources to reach hundreds of millions of Americans to hopefully shape their opinion about who to vote for, that is a victory in and of itself, because it suggests that that there's enough doubt in Americans' minds about the ultimate result of their election. And that's exactly the tactic that the Russians are trying to emulate in countries around the world, be it in Europe or in Latin America. The Russians can raise doubt in the citizenry about confidence they could have in their election results, then they are undermining democracy just by doing that.
It strikes me that maybe the Russians have sort of exhausted this as a useful tool, because now, you know, the day that we're recording this, yesterday we had Mark Zuckerberg, I think, finally sort of apologized for Cambridge Analytica. And they're now under heavy fire. I saw, I think, the same day, a very detailed explanation in one of the papers about how to sort of change all the ad settings on your Facebook account.
Right.
For precisely this reason, people are worried about, you know, what the ads are seeing or information gathered about them, et cetera. So if the Russians' intent was to discredit Facebook and sort of Twitter, then great, they succeeded. But this also means that they may no longer have this as a vector to influence elections. So if that's true, what else? You said there's other things in their toolbox. What else is in their toolbox that they would use?
Well, what the Russians have shown is that they're very adaptable to evolving technology. So the Russians exploited and manipulated the platforms of Facebook and Twitter very successfully over the last several years. And even if the social media companies make changes to reduce the influence of bots and other automated accounts, there's still going to be evolving technology that the Russians and other actors will be able to exploit. So, for example, there is technology that is developing that will allow users to manipulate video and pictures to such an extent that it will be nearly impossible to determine what is real and what is fake. So users could extract my voice, create text in my voice, superimpose it over a video of me speaking, and nobody will know the difference whether it was actually my words or someone invented it and just simulated my voice. So these are the types of evolving trends in technology that social media companies and traditional media companies are going to have to get ahead of in order to prevent the next wave of influence operations by foreign state actors. So in the long game, did the Russians discredit themselves by making social media companies aware of the fact that their platforms are being manipulated? Maybe. I guess we don't – the jury's still out on that because we're still waiting for social media companies to take action, and we're still seeing how Russians and other state actors are reacting to that by conducting operations in real time. But at least in the near to midterm, I'm still a little pessimistic that we will be able to fully deter the Russians and other state actors from conducting these types of influence operations, particularly as technology becomes more and more sophisticated.
So one response by the Russians, it sounds like what you're saying, is just to step up their game.
Right.
That instead of just creating some sort of cheesy Facebook group, right, you now have much more sophisticated video and, right, and you know, mixing and so on. So, okay, that's interesting. You are David, you're somewhat of an expert on sort of what makes Russia tick. What are their big priorities? And so one thing about the election meddling in Latin America that always struck me is sort of like, why? Why is this a priority for Russia? I mean, back in the days of the Soviet Union, it was pretty clear, sure, you know, the strategy was any place they could, they would undermine or replace a government to install one that was pro-Soviet or at least anti-U.S. If you look at sort of Russian interests in Mexico right now, they're not really that much. They have insignificant trade investment, even military sales. They haven't really had a significant military sale for like 20 years. So I'm just scratching my head, you know, do they really care about Latin America that much? Or are – and I'll add one thing to that. The other theory that I've heard is that all this is really just an effort to distract the Russian people and the world from what Putin is doing.
Right.
So let's take those sort of is that a satisfiable or satisfactory explanation, or is there some other dimension going on that we're just not aware of?
On the first point, as we witness a more revanchist, aggressive Russian posture across the globe, I think you're right that Latin America is not as strategically important to Russia as Europe or even the Middle East or even East Asia, for that matter. However, I think any chance, much like in Soviet times, as you said, any chance the Russians have now to drive a wedge between the United States and countries in its own backyard, especially countries that have been traditionally closer to Washington, like Mexico in recent years, the Kremlin will seize that opportunity to try to exacerbate existing fissures. So right now, and you can make the case that Mexico doesn't need any help in sort of distancing itself from the United States at the moment, given the rhetoric that comes out of the current administration and some of the policy measures that they have taken, including on NAFTA. But the Russians will see. The Russians don't always have to create the narrative or create the wedge. What they do is exacerbate it. So, if the Russians can launch an information operation through RT in Espanol, through automated accounts online to push these narratives and amplify them, then that is a victory for them. That essentially serves the Russians' purposes. And if it helps get someone like Mr. Lopez Obrador elected, great. And if it doesn't, ultimately it doesn't matter much, to the Russians, because they've at least created this type of chaos and soured these divisions or helped to sow these divisions within society. To your second point about the Russians launching these operations as a distraction, I see that I don't think necessarily that's the Russians' primary or even secondary motive, especially in a region like Latin America. But in the case of undermining democracy in the United States or in Europe, absolutely. I think the Russians try to conduct these operations in order to discredit democracy abroad so that someone like Vladimir Putin can point a finger at the West and justify his own autocratic rule to his own citizenry because he could look at what's happening in democratic countries and say, you really want this type of instability, this type of chaos, this type of doubt in the confidence in your government and your elections, when you could have a perfectly orderly government here, perfectly orderly elections without any discrepancies or any doubt. So there is a sort of there's a domestic component to what the Russians are doing too. I just don't know if that angle plays in Latin America like it does in Europe and the United States.
So I have two takeaways from what you just said, Dave. It's very interesting, by the way. One is that poking a stick in the Americans' eyes is always going to be an evergreen sort of Russian Soviet policy. It'll never get old. And the second thing is, and I think it's fascinating, that the Russians, it sounds like, aren't so much interested in undermining a specific government or even changing a specific government's policies. It's undermining the entire notion of democracy itself.
I think that's right. I think if they can change specific policies as a result of that, so much the better. I think there are some foreign policy goals that the Russians have in mind when they try to interfere in countries. But I think that your point is right. This is ultimately about undermining democracy itself, about destabilizing countries and that are perceived as either close to the United States or hostile to Russia. And those are ultimately the Russians. I mean, if you look at their national security strategy, the United States is still adversary number one. So if you could drive countries away from the United States by conducting these sorts of hybrid operations, great, then you've essentially carried out your national security strategy.
So, you know, for podcasters like me, this is great to have an evergreen topic. So I'm pretty convinced a year from now I can do Russia in country X, Y, or Z, and we'll have lots to talk about. David, thank you very much for joining me this morning, and I look forward to having you back on the show.
Thanks very much, Richard.
This week we're back with another installment of Big Little News. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, thank you.
And before we get onto that, actually, the biggest little news is you have been promoted. Is that correct?
I'm no longer an intern.
No longer in the ranks of the interns. You're now a program coordinator / research assistant. Is that correct?
That is correct. Still an intern at heart, though.
So this means you're going to be picking up the tab for all office happy hours and driving a fancy sports car. All right. So this week you have Venezuela is doing something funny with its currency. Maybe not funny in the ha-ha sense, but tell us what is going on here.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're going to talk about how Venezuelan money is essentially worthless. They've been going through a number of social and economic crises, and they're having one of the biggest economic crisis points is that they're in the middle of hyperinflation. They're expected to have 13,000% inflation in 2018.
Okay.
So the cash people have on hand is worth less and less every single day, but people still need cash to do everyday things like take taxis or buy food. And the banks, to try to limit inflation, they've put these really strict limits on how much money people can take out of the bank every day. So one example was a can of Coca-Cola costs, I think, 60,000 bolivares, but Venezuelans can only take out about 10,000 every single day.
So you'd have to go to the bank six times to buy one can of Coke.
Yeah, one week adds up to one can of Coke.
Right.
But because people need the cash, it's actually, in a weird way, become even more valuable because people can't access it, but they still need it. So some Colombians and probably some Venezuelans also have picked up on this. And on the Colombian border, they're now starting to sell cash at a higher price than it's worth back to Venezuelans.
So now, you instead of going to the bank six times, you go to the Colombian border.
Yep, you hike across to the Colombian border. A lot of Venezuelans are going to get their own cash, and they'll make a bank transfer to people at the border, and then they'll double the cost of what the actual money is worth, and then they'll give them the cash in hand so they can have it.
This doesn't seem like it can go on forever, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you know, one wouldn't think so, no.
Well, so just another piece of evidence, as if we needed some, that Venezuela is going through some tough times right now, and it looks like it's getting even worse. Thanks for that optimistic piece of little big news. Next time, what happened to the happiness index?
Right, I have to keep it balanced.
All right, Sarah, thanks again.